the fourth withdrawal, Jesus and his disciples, his followers, are in the area of Caesarea Philippi, really far north in the area of Palestine, one of the most northern points that Jesus visits. Last week, we talked about a major event that took place there, and that was Jesus asking his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And then they responded. And then he asked, "Well, who do you say that I am?" And then it was Peter's great confession there in Matthew 16:18 about Jesus being the Christ, the Son of the living God. And then he kind of elaborates upon that, Jesus does, and how important that confession was. So that's in the area of Caesarea Philippi. And then right after that statement in Matthew 16, down in verse 21, Jesus, we find something else that happens. Matthew 16, verse 21, "From that time Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the third day." From that time. Now, he had in verse 20, he had just said, he commanded his disciples that they should tell no one that he was the Christ. But then he starts telling them that he has to go to Jerusalem. And that when he gets there, it's going to be very difficult. There's going to be suffering. And this group of three that he mentions here, elders, chief priests, and scribes, those are the ones that normally describe the Sanhedrin, you know, the leaders of the Jews. Those are the leaders of the Jews right there. And he says he's going to be killed, but he would be raised the third day. He would be killed, but then raised the third day. Now, if you had been following Jesus like these apostles had been for, you know, at least 2.5 years, and Jesus says that I'm going to be killed and raised the third day, what might have been the thing that really stuck with them in that statement? When someone gives you news like that, a statement like that, what do you tend to concentrate on? Yes. And you might not have heard anything after that. Why? That type of thinking. You see it all the time. Yes, Mark.
In our modern civilized world, they so much more have to give up to.
Oh, yeah.
To the people
that
time,
oh, yeah. That's all right. Yeah. So much more today in so many different ways. So there's a lot of things we may have to deny. We deny doing other things on Sunday, don't we? Because the world, you know, Sunday's a big day of recreation for most of the world. You know, whatever happens to be, you know, that particular season or time of year, then Sunday's the day for them to go do whatever and have fun and have recreation and entertainment. And so someone that follows Christ denies having that kind of a Sunday. Their Sunday's totally devoted to the Lord. Okay. So he says those things, the denial, the taking up your cross, those things are necessary to follow me. And he says, if whoever desires to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. When he's talking about saving and losing, is he talking about the same life and losing the same life? In other words, for whoever desires to save his physical life will lose his physical life? No, he's not talking about that at all, is he? That's right. That's kind of a play on words, sort of, isn't it? For whoever desires to save his physical life will lose his spiritual life. If your physical life means that much to you that you're not going to deny yourself and take up your cross, then you'll lose your spiritual life. But if you lose your physical life for my sake, That's a way to find your spiritual life. So it's kind of a, I don't know if you want to call it a play on words, but it's certainly a way for people to remember what he said and what he was emphasizing. And then he makes it even clearer when he says, "For what profit is it to a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? Or what will a man give in exchange for his soul?" And again, that's the same idea. If you want, you know, you can have a lot of this world's goods. You know, I could be a millionaire many times over, couldn't I? Anybody in here could if they wanted to. If they wanted to deny Bible stuff. There are so many ways illegally to make money, you could be a millionaire many, many times over. And so Jesus says, if that's what you want, you can have it, but the consequences are you're going to lose your soul over it. You make the choice. Yes, see ya. Yeah, absolutely.
There's nothing wrong with this man making all this money.
That's right.
But he was self-centered. It was back on me doing this. And he chose to have God and everything else out of it. And
that's it.
Whether he died that particular night or it's been a week down the road, it's what God's saying. You're gonna lose your physical life because that's all you see.
Yeah.
You don't pass your riches.
That's right. That's exactly right. So Jesus wants people, you know, to answer that question. He'd already talked about denying themselves and taking up their cross. He had said, if you want to save your life, you're going to lose it. So he says, well, what is it worth? You know, losing your soul, what's it actually worth to you? Is it worth, you know, $1 million? Is that what you're going to give in exchange for your soul? Or $100 million? Or what are you going to give in exchange for your soul? What's it worth to you? So he says, for what profit is it if you gain the whole world? Well, what if you owned everything in the whole world? I don't know what that would be worth. But what if you were king of the whole world, possessed everything in the entire world? Jesus asked, is that enough? Would that be? Would you be willing to trade your soul and be lost forever to have that for 50 years, 75 years, 100 years? You know, you decide. The sad thing is people sell their souls for a whole lot less than the whole world, don't they? I mean, they'll sell it for nothing, practically.
That's what Jesus did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They'll sell it for small, small amounts. And just look at the, you know, we talked last week about inconveniences. You know, many Christians don't even want to be inconvenienced, let alone denying themselves. I mean, denial is a whole different level of commitment than being inconvenienced, and many Christians don't even want to be inconvenienced, let alone denying themselves. You ask some Christians to deny something in their lives, and they'll look at you like you have lost your mind. You want me to do what?
Entertainment.
Well, I tell you. I mean, it's amazing that there's many people in the Lord's church that are selling their souls for a whole lot less than everything in the world. Tiny amounts. Tiny amounts of things they're selling their soul for. So he asked the question, what will a man give in exchange for his soul? You know, like exchanging money, people did that in the first century. You know, you had to exchange money in the first century. And whenever you go to another country, you'll exchange money, and you know, if you go to this country, you give them so many dollars, and they'll give you so much of their currency back, and there's an exchange rate. And so Jesus says, well, here's your soul. Here's your eternal destiny, your eternal life, where you're going to spend eternity. Okay, what are you going to exchange that for? You go up to the exchange person, says, okay, I'm giving you this, what are you giving me back? And a lot of people will make that exchange and get hardly anything back. They're not concerned about what happens after death. They're not concerned about it. Whatever happens in this life, that's it. And apparently there's a lot of people in the Lord's church that have that same philosophy. They're not too concerned about what happens after this life. And that's apparent because of how they live their lives. They live their lives not denying themselves, not taking up their cross, not following Christ. And so that what they're exchanging for their soul is not very much. Exchanging for their soul is not. You just, getting some people to even come to much. That's crazy. You want me to do what? Come to study the Bible? That's ridiculous. I have things to do. I don't know what those things are, Margie. Apparently they think they're pretty important. It's sad what it is, because that exchange rate will come back and haunt them someday. So Jesus is really driving home this lesson. Yes,
it also really hurts when someone you think is really strong, and then they'll just
come to buy you. Why, crazy. What? Come to study the Bible? That's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is what it means.
Yeah. Okay, and that's what they're, that's them, right?
That's, exchange.
That's their exchange.
I confronted an elder about women teaching adults. Mm-hmm.
Are Margie. Okay. That was what he was to give up for his soul. That was his exchange rate. You know, you give an exchange for your soul? Well, I'll give my opinions. Yes, Margie.
Several good songs wrote about that before, you don't ever sing them.
Okay, that's important. Yeah. Is because that exchange rate will come someday. So Jesus is really driving home this lesson. Yes,
it also really hurts when someone, like when I drive one morning, when I get up at Wall Street, and there's that sign, my headlights hit that sign, it says, Jill Cameron, pastor. Mm-hmm. Well, how can you profess that we have pastors? No, you got to do it. Mm-hmm. Chapter 2.
Okay. So people will give very little in exchange for their soul. It doesn't have to take much. And it can be something as little.
And then he'll just tell you when you confront them with their, in my opinion, this is what it means.
Yeah. Okay, and that's exchange for them, right? Is their exchange.
I confronted an elder about
give an exchange for their soul. I would rather have
women teaching adults.
Well,
and
and that's what he was willing to give up, my soul. People just don't realize how awful hell is. That's what it comes down to. They don't really understand just how awful and long-lasting that judgment is. What will you exchange for your soul? Well, I'll give my opinions. Yes?
I know a fellow at work one day, we were talking about music in the church. I was telling him, I said, well, the sheer simplicity of it is to go
check.
Mm-hmm. So I said, somewhere back there 1,000 years ago, someone
about that before you don't ever sing.
Okay, that's yep. Yep.
Like I said, hey, this singing would sound a lot better for you, Lord. So they know every morning and trying to get up all satisfied that Wall Street one way. And there's that sign, my headlights hit that sign, it says Jill Cameron. Someone, the devil put the idea in their head. And then again, I was trying to get across to him how bad hell is going to be. I said, well, now, you just imagine this Safeway. No windows, no doors. You're trapped in here with the devil and his angels and all the worst people served in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And that ship is never going to end. You're going to whole darkness forever and ever and ever. You never get away from it.
Yeah. if you see, if you read very many religious polls, one thing that's obvious in every religious poll is the vast majority of people who profess to be religious believe in heaven, almost all of them. But there's only a small percentage of them that believe in hell. But practically every passage in the Bible that talks about heaven also mentions hell right along with it. So if you get rid of heaven, you've got to get rid of hell too. You can't have one without the other.
Right.
Right.
Luke's account of the rich man and Lazarus. Mm-hmm. The rich man wanted a drop of water to cool his tongue.
Just a drop. That's all he wanted. Yes, Margie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It really made an impact on the people that I've done before.
Mm-hmm. That's him. People just don't see what the Bible actually says.
When you find that in the Bible, you show it to me. And you go walk on the floor with it. Well, I went out to
the after the other. No. Very, very, very true. And sometimes that's what people give in exchange for their soul.
I have coffee with a couple of guys. And they're over and over.
And that's what some will give me.
And I went on out of the room. And his friend was in the room, and he made a comment. To
souls, they'll give their creed or whatever in exchange for their soul. Very, when Jesus was teaching this to his followers, he was, we don't really know their reaction because it's not recorded. But I'm sure some of them were, really questioning, okay, what would I give in exchange for my soul? Would I give nothing? Would I really not give anything in exchange for my soul? Because some of them, well, remember what happens when at the trial of Jesus when they start taking him off? Whoosh, they go everywhere. And remember, Jesus finds them in the upper room later after his resurrection. Apparently, they'd kind of been in hiding since all that happened. And Jesus had told them, here's one place, but there's others. I'm going to be killed, but I'm going to be resurrected. And he tells them it's going to happen in 3 days. I would like to think that I would be right there standing outside the stone waiting for him to come forth on that third day. But I might not have been. I might have been like the other disciples, went scattered and whatever. Yeah.
So he tells them that he's going to raise, I may not be quoting it right, but he's going to raise the 3 days.
Mm.
And they take it to mean that he's going to build a building and they get.
Oh.
If you add the music.
Mm.
Yeah. Now you're taking a change.
Yeah.
But he's going to go for 3 days.
Yeah.
They're confusing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that's, I think, they're confused how can you do this in 3 days.
Right.
So they don't see.
Yeah.
And we probably wouldn't either. I mean, people don't see it either.
Right.
Because people don't believe.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, too, that they mm-hmm. were so confusing the physical and the spiritual.
Yeah.
Field.
Yeah, that's the beginning of for his crucifixion.
Yeah,
I mean, very, very soon.
They're thinking, well, you can't build a building in 3 days.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were looking at the temple and selling all that.
The church is the people, not the building.
Yeah. Yeah, they were. There's another one of those. They had the problems with the physical and spiritual thing, and they really were very, very confused about it.
You would think all these people, these other churches with the music, would think when they read Colossians, Ephesians 5:19, and they mentioned the sheer simplicity of it.
They go on and
now you're taking change.
Yeah.
But
says, "For the Son of Man will come in the glory of His Father with His angels, and then He will reward each according to his works." I think that's significant that He brings that up, because He's just been talking to them about, okay, you're going to have to deny yourself to follow Me. You're going to have to take up your cross. You may have to give up your physical life. You know, all of these things that are... Well, He goes on as in their life, but then He says, "The Son of Man, well, at the end, come in the glory of the Father with His angels, going to come reward each according to His works." I think that's significant that He brings that up, because, you know, He's just been talking to them about, okay, you're going to have to deny yourself to follow Me. You're going to have to take up your cross. You may have to give up your physical life. You know, all of these things that are going to be difficult in their life. But then He says, well, at the end, He's going to come and reward you for what you have done. For what you've done. And I think there's some great significance there, you know, for what they've been doing, for what they're going to have to go through. And you look at, reward you for what you have done. For what you've done. It happens, you know, they experience Jesus, you know, the betrayal in the garden. They experience the trials He goes through, they know about the beatings, and they there's, you know, the death on the cross and how horrible that was. And so they experience all that. So, you know, they feel defeated. They feel like their cause is lost. Especially the ones that's been some great significance there, you know, for what they've been doing. And he, you know, he talked about the kingdom coming and what was going to happen in the kingdom and all these things. And then they see Jesus going through all this and dying on the cross. And I think it's one of those occasions where, you know, their emotions and their feelings overpowered their thinking. Because